going to talk about a topic I've discussed at this meeting before, and that's BV and lesbian and bisexual women. I'd like to acknowledge my colleagues, Kathy Ringwood and Kathy Thomas, who were instrumental in putting this presentation together. I think BV needs very little introduction for this group. It's the most common cause of vaginal symptoms prompting medical evaluation for vaginitis. Also the most common cause of vaginitis when a cause is identified. We estimate that at least 10% of women have experienced it. And I think most economically and sort of sociologically important, it may cause up to 11% of preterm deliveries in the United States, not to mention being associated with other adverse outcomes of pregnancy and pelvic inflammatory disease. We really don't know what causes BV. It's been a conundrum for many years, but we do know that it's been associated very strongly and repeatedly with douching, new male partner, unprotected sex in heterosexual women, and very interestingly, in several studies now, sex between women. There are, however, very limited information available on mediators for what increases this risk among women who have sex with women. In a couple of studies, we found that having a history of BV and sharing vaginal sex toys actually does predispose to BV. However, having a recent male partner or increasing number of female partners has not. So some paradoxical information, I think, about what this means in terms of sexual risk behavior. So our objectives for this study were to define the risk for bacterial vaginosis in lesbian and bisexual women with attention to detailed sexual risk history. And some of you may have seen me present data from a previous study where we looked at risk factors. But with this study, we really went to town on trying to figure out exactly what women were doing and with whom and when and how. Everything but why, basically. These were women who were recruited to a research clinic, 16 to 35 years old. To get into the study, they had to have had sex with another woman in the prior year. They were recruited through ads and were essentially self-referred, and also partners were allowed to refer their partners. All of them underwent a very, very detailed computer-assisted self-interview, or CASI, at enrollment, and then symptoms were carefully assessed as well, and they were defined as a change in vaginal fluid. We diagnosed BV clinically by the AMSL criteria and then confirmed them with Gram stain of vaginal fluid by Nugent criteria. And then we looked at associations between BV and subject characteristics using a statistical test noted. We did also adjust for enrollment of both partners currently in a sexual relationship because, as you'll see, we ended up with a fairly substantial number of partners. So between October of 2003 and March of 2007, we enrolled 335 women. I should mention this is a study of longitudinal vaginal flora, so these women were followed for a year, but I'm only going to present the enrollment data now. Their median age was 25, and the BV prevalence was 29%, and for those of you who work in family planning or STD clinics, that's actually higher than what we see in many STD clinics in the United States. This graph just gives you a sense of what some of their characteristics were. You can see that about 22% of them were non-white, a third of them had had a history of BV, a third of them were smokers currently, 8 to 9% were currently using some hormonal contraception, and I'll come back to that. About 8% were Hispanic, only about 6% were Hispanic, 6% douched, and as I mentioned, the BV prevalence was actually about 29 to 30%, and in blue has represented the 40% of them who were symptomatic. So most of the women with BV were actually asymptomatic. In looking at their sexual history, 91% of the group had reported any sex in the last 3 months, and I'm going to use the three-month time frame to really describe their sexual behaviors. Of the group who was sexually active, 276 reported recent female partners within that time frame, and a third of those reported a new female partner. 24% of these women reported male partners in the recent 3 months. 10% of those were new partners. And if you extended that time period to a year, 47% of these women had had a male partner within the previous year, or 40%, sorry. And shown over here just are the frequency of their partners, shown a little bit differently in yellow here. About 65% reported female partners only in the last 3 months. A smaller number, about 18%, both male and female, and then 10% male only. This slide just shows the number of partners in the last 90 days, and you can see the majority of women here who were sexually active with other women in the last 90 days only had one partner, about 80%, and a smaller number had two or more partners. A very similar pattern for those who reported, the 80 women who reported a male partner in the last 30 days. And then finally, what were these women doing in terms of sexual practice in the last 90 days? They were pretty busy and had a very diverse repertoire, I would say. Among all women, virtually all of them had receptive vaginal oral sex, and virtually all of them had any receptive vaginal sex, and we defined that as receptive vaginal or anal sex, but with penis, fingers, or a toy. Receptive anal sex, with any of those sort of objects, was practiced by about 40% of them, so actually quite frequently, and about 22% reported sharing a vaginal toy with their female partners. For those who reported sex with a male partner in the last 3 months, shown on the right there, virtually all of them reported a vaginal intercourse, and a substantially low number of them, I would say, reported condoms with their last sexual intercourse. It was about 25%. And then anal intercourse with male partners was reported by about 20% of the women who reported sex with men. So I should be clear that those percentages refer just to the women who reported sex with a male partner. So with that background, let's then proceed to look at the risk factors for prevalent VVD. And what you're seeing here is just the univariate analysis. And shown in the histogram is the prevalence of BV in the different subgroups. So the farthest left bars there show the prevalence of BV by age younger than 26 or older than 26, and younger is shown in orange there. Prevalence of BV shown for black women in orange versus non-black in blue, and then smokers in orange versus non in blue. And you can see from both the p-values and the associated odds ratios on the side there that the directions were as you would expect, but that they were not significant from a statistical standpoint at all. We then looked at BV-related history in these women. And again, down below, prior BV history was associated with a 60% increase in risk. Having a partner with a history of BV, not BV at the time of diagnosis, I'll come back to that, was associated with the highest odds of having BV, and that was almost 5, highly significant. And having current symptoms, in contrast to what Emily showed this morning from the NHANES data, actually did predict BV, but with about a 2-fold increase. The bottom two things, partner with BV history and current symptoms, are significant. The prior BV did not quite reach statistical significance. And then finally, just looking at their sexual practices in the last 90 days, you can see vaginal intercourse, any receptive vaginal, receptive oral anal, female-to-female genital contact, sharing toys, or lubricant, vaginal lubricant use. Interestingly, the only things that were significant in this analysis, and again, this is still the univariate analysis, is women having shared a vaginal toy with about a 2-fold increase of likelihood of being diagnosed with BV, or interestingly and surprisingly to us, a report of using vaginal lubricant, which again was associated with an odds ratio of 2.1. We then performed an adjusted analysis looking at risk for BV, and this was a little complicated because it turned out that vaginal lubricant use and vaginal sex toy use, not surprisingly, were intensely correlated. So you really couldn't enter those into the model at the same time. So what this model actually does is to assess the contribution of those two factors in separate multivariate analyses. And you can see the vaginal lubricant use, while still associated with an increased odds ratio, did not remain significant, but sharing a toy did, or very closely, sorry, it's actually close to one, so it also didn't reach it. Having a partner with BV history had an odds ratio of 4.5. So highly significant. I should mention that we looked at a number of other factors in this model that either pathologically or epidemiologically have made sense. There was no association in this model with age, race, smoking, hormonal contraceptive use, douching, vaginal intercourse, receptive anal or oral sex, or number of or new partners. And as you can see, except for douching and race, we really were able to look at the contribution of most of these risk factors because they were practiced pretty frequently. So that led us to look then at the status of partners enrolled in the study. There were 47 women who were in sexual partnerships in the study, so 94 women, and we defined a partnership as women who had been sexually active with that partner within the last 3 months. And what we found was that both women were BV negative in 22 couples, they were discordant for BV in 5 couples, and they were concordant for the presence of BV in 20 couples. And this degree of concordance for the presence or absence of BV is strikingly different than what you would expect if you just calculated the likelihood of BV, as I've done here, based on the overall population prevalence of BV in the study group. So what you would expect if this was just a random sort of occurrence of BV in these women in partnerships would be to have 13 couples, 11 couples, and 24 couples. So a very strong deviation from what you would expect to see by chance, again supporting that there may be some mechanistic process involved in being a sexual relationship with a woman who has BV. So what we concluded was that distinct risks predict prevalent BV among lesbian and bisexual women in terms of demographics and hygiene, namely race and douching, which are two of the most consistent, most prominent risk factors consistently across all other studies. These were not prominent at all in this largely white group of women with very, very infrequent douching, yet still a BV prevalence of about 30%. Sex did seem to be important. However, it was not, again, the sort of sexual behaviors we necessarily expected. We were not surprised to sort of have confirmed this finding of vaginal fluid exchange or behaviors that might support vaginal fluid exchange, but we were somewhat surprised about the vaginal lubricant use. So I think further study would be quite helpful. What would naturally flow from these findings, I think, would be an intervention to prevent sexual transfer of vaginal fluid. We've actually completed this study, and I hope to be presenting results at the BASH ASTDA meeting in May in New York. I think we need to understand risks for incidence, persistent, and recurrent BV, not just prevalent BV, and we are analyzing these data with that in mind. I think looking at molecular descriptions of partners' vaginal flora is important. Do partners have the same vaginal bacteria when you apply molecular techniques to more sort of fastidiously define what those populations are? And then finally, based on this rather surprising finding, which I should mention Rebecca Brotman at Hopkins has actually found in a separate study as well, I think looking at the assessment of lubricant use on vaginal lactobacilli and other parameters of the vaginal ecology or ecosystem is really important. These are some of the lubes that our patients said that they used most commonly, and I've just noted that the pH of these, which we've investigated both sort of looking at the labels and also in the lab, ranges from 5.8 to 6.1, and other components vary. KY jelly, for example, has chlorhexidine, which is a very strong antiseptic, so it's quite possible that these solutions may not only directly affect lactobacilli, but they may act essentially as pH buffers and modify the vaginal pH directly. So I think theoretically it makes sense that these things, if used persistently or continuously, could potentially contribute. There were some serious limitations to our study. Our subjects were self-referred or referred by partners, which definitely limits the reproducibility and generalizability. However, we did have excellent retention in the prospective study. I haven't showed you that. But we also had women with very diverse sexual practices, as you can see from our sexual practice frequency behavior. Also, though many of these women reported sex with men, I don't know that we can say that these results are generalizable to women who are only sexually active with men, and I think we need to look at that group separately to sort of help us figure out what's going on. I'll just end by again thanking you for your attention and also acknowledging the incredible work of the group of people that went into to doing this work and also to the study participants. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeannie. We'll have time for one or two questions for clarification or points arising from this presentation.
So the question is, have you done similar research with HPV? Do you mean in lesbian and bisexual women? Yeah, so actually our very first studies in this group were on HPV, and we don't have great partner data for HPV, but we have seroprevalence data and HPV DNA data by PCR, and I think we showed fairly convincingly that those infections occurred regardless of whether women had reported sex with men in the past. And we could find HPV both at cervix, all three at cervix, vagina, and vulva. So there were high-risk HPV types, and there were pap smear abnormalities, intraepithelial lesions in women who had not reported sex with men. And I can get you some of those references if you're interested. Thanks a lot.
Great. Thank you.